Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's EcoLogic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and today it's Maria Cho. She is the CEO of Triple Bar, a biotech firm using advanced technology to tackle the urgent issues of food and drug supply. Happy to have Maria on the podcast today. Hi, Maria. Welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Hi, Ted. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, just delighted to meet you. And you're going to take me off into a topic area that I don't know much about. So as I did a little prep work on you, I thought, this is going to be really interesting. But let's just get a little bit acquainted. You're sitting, are you in your company offices in Emeryville in the Bay Area?
Yep. I'm at the offices, East Bay, San Francisco, sitting at a little phone booth. So the sound is nice and quiet, but, we're kind of active downstairs in lab work and everything, but glad to be here with you today.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. And what's hot? What are you guys working on today? I've already introduced you as the head of this biotech firm, and we're going to go deep into it, but I always like to say what's top of mind today? Is there something specific that's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the kind of constant mission that drives us is feeding and healing people and planet. And so everything we do has to be focused on that mission. And, what's keeping me up at night is how do we feed the world by 2050? And I know we'll probably talk about that and at some point during the conversation, but that's what I'm thinking about right now.
So. Well, let's just dive into it. I've got my list here, but I can juggle things around. But so you perceive, obviously, we have this huge goal. We have population increasing. We want to feed everyone. You must perceive a big gap between where we're at now and this population, the expected population.
Yeah, totally. I mean, so by 2050, I think the Good Food Institute said that we'll be somewhere around 10 billion people in the world and yeah. Be short of the food to be able to sustain that by somewhere between 20% and 30%. And that's a pretty big number, Ted. I mean,
it's a big number.
Thinking about the way that we make food today, we have to change and we have to innovate to be able to make sure that everyone has access to nutrition basically avoid famine. So I think everything, it's like, how does everything that we do today impact that goal? And that's kind of the things that we're thinking about. I mean, I can talk specifics, that's the biggest issue. So,
well, we'll get into it. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the green revolution that wasn't so green, right? What was that? Wasn't like 30 or 40 years ago and sort of the, all the farmers and all of the research labs, everybody got fired up about, maximizing yield, but it was at the expense of everything else, like our health and the health of the soil and the health of the air and the health of the plant. I mean, talk about contrast now how, in broadest picture, you do have the same mission of feeding the world, but how are you different?
Yeah, exactly. I think, as humanity continues to, grow in the population, we're constantly faced within some generation with an existential crisis and we innovate in times of those crises. And I think the Industrial Revolution, the Green Revolution, these are examples of where we were forced to innovate to solve the challenges that we needed to face. And so while some of those challenges were solved, it then created other problems and we learned that, okay, so maybe this wasn't the best way to approach it. But so going into this next era of, leveraging biotechnology or, bioengineering, however you want to tackle the game, leveraging these kinds of tools, we have to not only solve the problem, but do it in a way that starts to undo the problems that we created with, kind of past generational innovations or technologies that we were forced to create. And so I think there's this double calling that we have to achieve. And I think that can be done if done in the right way. And if we're all focusing on the same mission, I think we, in this space, right, I think we can actually achieve those outcomes.
What would be an example? Can you give me an example of where your bioengineering is sort of supplanted the, don't know, maybe it was the brute force programs of the of the past.
Yeah. So I mean, it maybe touches specifically on things we're doing here at Triple Bar, but you know, I think we take this concept of miniaturization, and so you know, companies in past are kind of, you know, rusty toolboxes of technologies that we've used require, you know, tons of footprint, tons of plastic, tons of things that, you know, hazardous waste, for example, that are impactful. So while you're, you know, making a thing that might be good at the end, you're then causing all of this damage in the process. And so Triple Bar, by miniaturizing the test process is what we call it. Mm-hmm. We basically take airplane hangars full of liquid handling robots and plastics and hazardous waste and put it into a test tube that fits in the palm of your hand. And this is one of the examples of how, like, we can impact, you know, the process by which we use technology to kind of counteract the negative effects of the benefits of that technology.
Okay, now I got to stop you here because this sounds very cool. How do you take an entire hangar and put it in a test tube? That just
it's super cool.
What's going on there? What is that? How do you do that?
Yeah, so we leverage a technology called microfluidics. And so Jeremy Agresti is our founder and CTO at Triple Bar. He basically created this technology back at the University of Cambridge Molecular Medicine. This is where, like, DNA was discovered, for example. And then basically said, here's biology. Let's control biology with physics. And that's what he did at Harvard. And said, let's take this unit of measure that is the test tube in biology. So a test tube is like you put something in it that you want to test, and then you put test reagents into that thing. Those are the things that actually create that reaction within that test tube. And then there's a readout. So it looks green, or it, you know, it has this kind of, you know, kind of number associated with it. So we take that test tube, which is something you hold in your hand, and we miniaturize that into a picoliter droplet of water. So think of like a bucket of water inside the San Francisco Bay. That's kind of an example of how we do that. Okay. And then we can control all those little buckets, all those little drops using physics, and we put them on a chip, a microprocessor. So this is like, you know, think about how you miniaturize computation and from rooms full of vacuum tubes into like an Intel chip or something. We basically do the same thing. We create that, what we call the Triple Bar's microprocessor. So all that's how we basically create. So we shrink it. It's like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. It's Honey, I Shrunk the Test Tube down into this little.
And then it allows you to test different compositions materials to see which one is beneficial.
That's right. So we can look at tens of millions to hundreds of millions of these different little micro reactors in a single day, instead of, you know, maybe 10,000 in a month. So it just allows us to actually make real progress using biology to solve these problems. We can talk about how we apply this technology, but it's really kind of impacting, like I said, both the kind of process under which we do it, as well as with the output being much faster and cheaper, essentially.
Right. Well, now, how would genetically modified organisms, how does that fit into that? Is that, would that be one of the ways that you might influence this test tube is that genetically influencing the plant in the food group that we're growing, or is that?
Yeah. So we focus, so we leverage the technology in a place where innovation is needed, and where we know the technology can bring a benefit to create a product for humanity. So maybe we'll even go a higher level. So Triple Bar, the three bars, is the mathematical symbol for identity or identical. And so we make proteins or nutritious food components that are found in nature, but we do it using biotechnology. And so how you do that is you take a microbe. So these are, you know, they're yeast or bacteria. This is how you make like beer, for example. So you use microbes to ferment, and then you end up with the beer, or, you know, fermentation for wine or whatever. But we, instead of the organism doing the fermentation process for the kind of end alcohol, it's actually just secreting or, you know, creating that protein inside of it. And then we just pull that protein out. But it's the same protein that would be found in like a milk component, or a protein that would be found in an animal cell. We just make that using biotechnology.
Okay, now Maria, all the way back, what did you want to be when you were a little girl?
Oh my gosh, I love this.
I mean, it certainly wasn't this.
No, it wasn't.
You couldn't possibly imagine anything close to this.
No. So impressive. It's funny. I wanted to be a doctor. You know, I was like, oh, let's go be a doctor. I want to, you know, solve problems. And then, I went to college, and then I took a year off between college and medical school, and I worked in a doctor's office and for 6 months as a medical assistant. I'm like, I don't want to be a doctor. I don't want to push around pills. I want to actually like make products. I was always like tinkering with little things and thinking about how can we make something better? How can we, you know, make something that people want or people need? Just as a kid, like as like, I'm, you know, my family always said, you always take on these like little projects, you have like 15 projects that you start and then, you know, you want to just get to some outcome. And that just ultimately, you know, flowed into my life. So.
But now the doctor's office, you had all, I guess you had all, I can imagine all these patients come in, they've all got various illnesses.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, wait a second, you're thinking that the drug industry or the pharmaceutical industry is not hitting it, right?
No.
They're synthesizing something that they think will have some effect. And what you're saying is there's got to be more of a natural solution. Am I getting this right?
Yeah. I just felt like, you know, you'd sit down with a patient and they'd have this list of 10 medications and it was all just like covering up the symptoms. It wasn't actually treating the problem. And I thought, well, what if there's a way if we can actually treat, like create healthy solutions for people or create personalized treatment that's actually focusing on the problem and not masking the problem or masking the symptom of the problem. And that was like a fundamental thing for me that kind of like led me to work in you know, creating drugs or trying to work in the drug space for as long as I did.
But why wouldn't the pharmaceutical companies have had that same exact viewpoint? You know, we don't want a band-aid. We want to get to the root cause. And why?
It's a really simple answer is that, fundamentally, as like genetically, similar as every human is on the planet, our biology and our metabolism are equally that different. And so trying to find a kind of one size fits all approach, to a problem, understanding kind of all the intricacies of disease biology, is still an unsolved problem. And I think it's something that if we could solve that problem, we can unlock how we can feed ourselves properly, how we can treat the diseases that we have properly, but that is still a fundamental problem.
So somebody comes into this doctor's office, now you're in charge. and instead of, you know, whatever they had done in the past, best practice in the past, would you have to take each individual patient and run a number of tests on the patient?
I think, in order to
prescribe the best nutrition for that patient?
I think that's right. I mean, I think everybody is slightly different. You know, our kind of way, I think about even the way that I eat. You know, I know that some folks are vegan, some folks are vegetarian, some folks are like, I'm going to be keto, like my, you know, and I'm like, I can't do keto. I break out in a rash. Like everybody is different, right? And so you have to, I think personally, like I would look at a patient and say, okay, what is your specific thing? And also like, how motivated are you to make those changes, right? So that it would be specific. I think the future of where we will be is personalized medicine, personalized food, personalized nutrition. I think that's where we will go, and it feels so unattainable at this point. But I think that it actually is the future, right?
I want to talk a lot about food, but before we do this personalized medicine, do you have products right now, or are you doing more research right now, or what's your status on that front?
Yeah, we're working on that approach. We have a unique ability within our technology to actually do that kind of both diagnostic drug creation process kind of all at once. And so we're in a kind of a proof of concept stage. Hopefully we'll be talking a bit more about it upcoming, but kind of the first really true personalized medicine based on, and we're targeting oncology to start. I think they're, you know, cancer drugs, right? I mean, cancer is not a solved problem. And so, you know, if we can focus on taking an individual patient's cell and saying, okay, what does your cell look like? let's treat your cell, not, you know, the combination of everybody else's cell with this kind of one size fits all drug that might work 20% of the time. Like, how can we treat your cell? So that's what we're focused on.
And is that, I looked on your website, is that what cell line development is all about?
So that's, yeah, it's, we call it, TCR, TCE program, kind of our T cell, program. And T cells part of an immune system. It's like how your body fights off all the bad things. And then when it goes awry, then it doesn't, you know, solve the problem of cancer. So you can either reprogram the immune system, which is what, you know, like cell therapies or CAR Ts or those kinds of things are doing. Or you can actually give the immune system a better quarterback so that it can create the play that it needs to cure its own problem. And so that's the approach that we're taking.
Boy, that sounds fantastic. That sounds really fantastic. Okay, so let's go to food now.
Okay.
Because you've stated that you're going to be helping to solve the food shortages of 2050. Mm-hmm. So talk about that. Where is your company Triple Bar sort of infusing its expertise in this equation? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're focused on a very specific part of the value chain, which is kind of early on what I'm calling complementary proteins. A lot of folks know these as alternative proteins. I think there's places where it really is complementary to what we're consuming today, but being able to be more widely accessible, that's the approach we're taking. So we're essentially creating organisms that make proteins that are found in nature. So food proteins, functional proteins, bioactive proteins. These are proteins that are usually isolated from natural sources. They're just very expensive to do so, and they're in limited quantities in those natural sources. So climate impact is quite a consideration in that. And we make them through fermentation. So the same process that you would use to make beer, we make those out of organisms. The other thing that we're focused on is the cultivated meat industry. This is an exciting industry that really has the ability to kind of impact, how we are able to eat kind of, I guess, what some would say the most densely packed, nutritious protein that's available. But we just make it without the animal. I think the ultimate goal with both of these technologies is to be able to make proteins kind of on location, right? I mean, I think this is one of the key problems in the food system is all the logistics to ship food and to go from one area to another. If we can just make the food ingredients or food proteins on, in country or on site of where it's going to be distributed within a reasonable kind of amount of location, I think we can start to make some real impact. And so the approach we're doing supplies those kind of cell lines, initial cell lines, to companies that have, the manufacturing capabilities or the ability to make those proteins and then distribute them. So we're a part of that value chain, but really one that requires a ton of innovation, and we're really making a big impact in that space.
That is so fascinating. I have so many questions of you. You'd be the perfect person to have a beer with, at some point.
I would love to.
Maria, what do you really, here's the first question. It sounds like you're using all organic materials.
I mean, we're using all things that are, kind of known, safe workhorses in the space. We're just applying them in a slightly different way. And so I think.
Okay. So like the cultivated meat, which really caught my attention on your website, which is, I mean, now we're all getting used to Impossible Burgers and Beyond Burgers and which I don't know how you feel about that, but let's just walk me through where you get the materials or what the inputs are for the cultivated meat.
Yeah. So cultivated meat is they actually are meat cells. So meat or fat. So I guess what gives kind of meat that we know it, its taste and texture profile is really the kind of composition of fat. And obviously animal cells that are grown in farms or otherwise are exposed to all of the environmental components. So in this case, we're just isolating initial cells that we use from various kind of meats or, muscle tissue or fat tissue. And then we create cells from that grow not in animals, but in large bioreactor tanks. And so
you're starting with actual animal cells?
Yeah. So they're actual animal cells
that serve as like the starter for this whole process.
Yeah. And that's what's different from like an Impossible Food or a Beyond Meat. All of their food products, they are plant-based. So it's soy-based. And then they have this kind of unique biotech component where they create a component called heme, which is the thing that makes meat red. And right. It just looks red. So that's the difference. So it is different. In this case of cultivated meat, it actually is real meat, meat product.
Yeah. And do you actually sell a burger that we could all buy in the Whole Foods or somewhere?
So the industry is still in its earlier stage. So I think there's kind of several different layers of meat. There's structured meat, which would be like a chicken breast, for example. And then there's unstructured meat, which would be like hamburgers or sausages and things like that. And then there's various components of how much of the meat cells are in that product. You know, the main problem in this space is that the cost to make these cells grow in bioreactors is not at what we call cost parity, right? So it's not going to be the same price as a burger. It's going to be a lot more expensive than a burger. And so our goal is to evolve those cells so that they can be grown in kind of lower cost medias. They still maintain the same nutrition profile that we want them to have, but they ultimately would be at the same cost or even less than the cost of those proteins that you would purchase like in a burger patty or otherwise. So we have a long way to go.
Okay. You're reeling me in a little bit. I thought I could go buy one this afternoon.
Oh, no, not yet.
But is it fair to say that this whole notion of personalized, that every burger might be different and for each individual? Like if you have a family of four that based on the testing of your body, maybe you'd have a different composition for each one?
Yeah, I mean, I think what would be exciting is I think that could be the future, right? It feels very science fiction right now, but I think in the future it is, you know, what are the nutrition components that your body specifically needs, and then being able to tailor that nutrition either through kind of whole foods that you're eating or, you know, supplements. You know, if you're vegan, you don't get enough B12, right? So you have to supplement with B12. Can that be infused into different aspects? And so I think ultimately that would be the goal. I don't think that's the 2050 goal, but never know. I think that would be a fun goal.
Well, you're almost leading us towards like having a 3D printer for your own burger. I'm using the hamburger as the example, but you know, that each person would input all their details into it and they'd have the basic food stock or the animal stock, as you said, and then it grows the proteins in a way that I presume that could be very tailored to each individual person.
Yeah. I think I think that's where we want to go. I think the thing we always have to think about is kind of consumer adoption of that approach, right? I mean, people are used to eating a certain way. I think, you know, our previous generations were used to eating a certain way. Yep. Future generations will eat differently than how we eat now. And I think the goal is for these food products to taste good, like as good or better than what we're used to consuming. I think about like milk, right? So I don't think 10 or 15 years ago, you know, people were drinking oat milk or almond milk or other types of milk. Right. But now it's like every refrigerator in America, oh, I have almond milk, I have this, I have that, right? And I think it ended up taking more than 10% market share of like all dairy, right? So I think there has to be a shift in kind of consumer adoption, and then the technologies are advancing such that we can actually make those kind of outcomes like the Star Trek food replicator, right? A reality. So, yeah.
Well, then let's talk sort of on the more macro scale. You've done a great job of describing, I think, on the micro scale. Or what kinds of food products are you envisioning that will feed this 10 billion people?
Yeah. I think it's really about bringing costs of these proteins down so that access can be more widely achieved. And so I'll give you a great example of a specific protein that TripleBar is working on. It's a protein called lactoferrin. It's a protein that's usually incorporated into early life nutrition, infant formula, adult supplements, but it's very expensive when it's isolated from dairy. And so we are making this protein using fermentation. We're partnered up with a group out of the Netherlands called Friesland Campina Ingredients. They're kind of the third largest dairy ingredient producer in the world. 150-year-old incumbent in dairy, saying we need additional ways of getting this protein out on the market and at cost points that everyone can achieve. Right now, these proteins are only incorporated into, you know, high-end infant formulas, expensive adult nutrition. But if we can bring the cost of those down 10x, it becomes accessible throughout. And even in areas where famine is a problem, if these, you know, proteins can be, you know, distributed in pill or powder form or whatever, then, you know, that actually provides access to those proteins globally, not just.
So again, then you start with an animal protein, right? In this case, milk probably. Right?
Yeah, it would be a protein that's isolated from milk. So it's okay. It looks the same as bovine is the word, right? So cow, right? Bovine lactoferrin. But we just take that, the gene for what that protein looks like, and we put it into an organism, and then we make it that way.
I mean, what are you feeding that organism?
Oh, just all different types of like growth medias, things that it actually would grow in. And so then the organism is making a lot of that protein. Organisms either make the protein inside of itself, or it secretes it, so it kind of spits it outside of itself. And so in either of those two contexts, then we have this kind of bovine identical protein, but it's just made using biotechnology.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Wow. And so is that why this would be a more sustainable way of feeding the planet?
Yeah.
Is there just not enough milk to give everybody the amount of milk
that they should? Yeah, that's exactly right. There's just not enough milk. There's not enough of this protein within milk, for example. And so if we can make more nutritious proteins, more highly concentrated and at lower prices, we can actually start to feed the world. So it's a kind of, it's a nutrition feed, right? I mean, I think we think, oh, can we just get burger patties to every country in the world? I think the approach is really more, how can we get access to nutrition throughout the world? And that's really kind of feeding the world.
And the technology that you're using could be replicated in the developing world?
Yes. Yeah, that's the goal, right? So I think ultimately can be, you know, localized. I mean, I would say like, not that Singapore is a developing world, but it's, you know, I think the Asia Pacific, the APAC region is certainly a region that is hypersensitive to food security, you know, food scarcity. And I think the government agencies in those areas have been really, really supportive of these types of innovations so that you can make these proteins or these products on site, in country. And then, you know, I know Singapore has this goal of making 30% of their food supply by 2030. I think it's a great goal. I don't know if they'll achieve it, but I think they're putting all of the things in place to make sure that that happens. And that's kind of the first step really into food security.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. Boy, oh boy. Now, at the other end of food security are cosmetics, I think. And I know nothing about cosmetics. But I know that people spend a lot of money on them. I think probably it's a good thing that people look fantastic. But you also have a cosmetic line, or part of what you do is related to cosmetics, right?
Yeah. So my first startup was a company that used biotechnology to make a product in acne care. And so I was it was actually a very personal story. I was an acne sufferer for most of my life. And, you know, I'm like, well, I mean, shoot, I got this problem. Can I use biotech to solve my own problem? And so started a company, made a product, you know, it was one of those like, you know, make it in your garage and then, you know, get some money and then build out a company. And so the product's on the market today. It's called Phyla. I'm acne free. And it's really a success story that, you know, you can use biotech to solve a problem. If that's kind of like your jam and you're excited enough about
it. And so what was the bio, what was, how did that technology solve the problem?
Yeah,
it was a new, you did analysis again, back to that test tube, you did analysis and found out this is really what needs to be done so that you're solving the problem, not just Band-Aid.
Yeah, that's Band-Aid exactly over. Right. That's exactly right. So my co-founder and I invented what we call a microbiome editing technology for the skin. So it basically plucks out the bad bacteria that causes the acne and then leaves the rest of the healthy bacteria and other things that are growing on your skin in place. So it kind of recalibrates the skin microbiome to a healthy state, thereby you know, solving the acne problem. And so it's not just like, you know, wiping out the entire bacterial community on the skin, like, you know, retinoids or other types of, you know, cosmetic ingredients, but it's actually a targeted approach. And I think this was kind of my first soiree into like precision approach to how you solve a problem versus just kind of blasting everybody with all the same kind of, you know, cheap ingredients that cause skin damage and don't actually solve the real problem.
Yeah. How great. I am so impressed by you and what you're doing and your big, big vision. Okay. So now last question, how do you maintain balance in your life? You look great. You look healthy, happy. You've raised tens of millions of dollars for your works, which is congratulations. What are you doing to keep balance?
Yeah, I think, you know, I love Orange Theory Fitness, a plug out there. If you ever want like a great fitness class, that's the one that I do.
Orange Theory?
Orange Theory Fitness. It's, of course, I'm a science nerd, so it's based on a tech thing called the Orange Zone, where you keep your heart rate in a certain zone. It optimizes your VO2 max and thereby, you know, kind of recalibrating your body composition. So more muscle, less fat, longer life, all that fun stuff. So that's a fun thing. I have a great, incredibly supportive, wonderful spouse. My husband is the most magical man on the planet and just supports me in everything I do. We have two fur babies. We just adopted a fur puppy this weekend, which I'm so excited about.
Yeah.
She's a 2-year-old rescue, a border collie. We love her already. But yeah, it's about like enjoying life, but also being passionate about what I do on the day to day. It doesn't feel like work if what you're doing is fun and solving really great big problems. And so I think that's how I balance things.
How great. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. You have inspired me and you've inspired, I'm sure, our listeners. So again, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Ted. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.